This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for IT professionals. For more information, advertising opportunities, and to download other shows, visit ciaops.podbean.com. This is episode 33 with Jeff Middleton and Ken Schaefer, and is brought to you by VMVault, leaders in Australian-based hosting virtualization and private VMware clouds. For more information, visit them on the web at www.vmvault.com.au. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode, we're joined by not one, but we're joined by two personalities. Firstly, I'll introduce Jeff Middleton. Jeff, how are you going?
I'm doing great, Robert. It's good to talk to you from the U.S. Have long looked to get onto your show here, and this is my first opportunity, so thank you for inviting me.
No problems. And over also the seas is Ken. Ken, how are you going?
Doing well, Robert. Thank you again for having us over on the East Coast, or sorry, the West Coast of the West U.S.
So we're covering all the way from Australia.
We're covered.
Exactly. That's the main thing. I thank you both for obviously putting time out on I think it's a Friday evening over there for you guys. And we're obviously here to discuss, something that's changed. It's made a big change in our market space or in the small to medium business market space. But before we get into that, for those people who might not recognize our distinguished guests, I'll just get firstly Jeff to introduce himself, let us know who he is, what he does. If you can do that for us, Jeff.
Very good. So I'm Jeff Middleton. I'm probably best known as the guy behind SBS Migration. That would be a company that the name tells you what it does. I'm also a small business server MVP since 1999, and I've been doing small business related IT consulting back 25. Now we're approaching the over 25, and we just don't talk about how long.
So yeah, you're joining the Senior Citizens SMB Club, I think.
There you go.
Okay, Ken, do you want to give us a bit of background on yourself?
Sure. We're an IT service provider in Oregon, and have been serving small businesses for not quite 25 years, but pretty close to it. And also leader of the local SBS partner group in Portland, Oregon, and Southwest Washington area called Technology Wizards.
Excellent. Okay. Well, now that we've introduced everybody, I suppose that we need to frame our discussion today. For those of you who aren't aware, Microsoft recently announced that they're having a number of major server changes, and specifically one of those changes is that they have let everybody know, finally, that the SBS product that is currently available, 2011 product, is the final product that will be called Small Business Server. Now, obviously, that's had mixed emotions and mixed reactions on the out there from resellers and all sorts of people. But again, part of our discussion here is probably to frame it around a bit more of a let's actually sit down and have a think about this and discuss this a bit rationally, rather than some of the emotive responses that have been out there. And it's had a little bit of time to sink in, but probably the best place to start with a reaction from that is from someone like Ken. Obviously, Ken, it affects your business, and you see it with the technology group that you're looking after there as well. What's your reaction? What's your feedback to the announcement?
Well, it really caught us by surprise quite a bit. We suspected eventually something like this was going to happen prior to SBS 2008 even, but we certainly had no idea that the official word was coming at the time that it came. It really caught us by surprise.
But would you say that, obviously you felt something that was coming or whatever, that you don't see that there were signs there that would indicate that, that to an extent SBS is maybe not struggling, but there are major things behind the scenes going on there?
Well, it's funny. I think a lot of people think that, but as a small shop, a lot of us guys are just head down doing our work. And, we don't see all the signs and all the writings on the walls because we aren't looking at those walls. In that case, I think we missed a lot of things that might have been good clues.
Would it be fair to say perhaps also that, you know, I look at the end of the day, Microsoft, I think it would be fair to say that Microsoft has been fairly vocal about, you know, wanting to push resellers to cloud, wanting to push them to the Office 365 product, getting them to change their business model. You know, that certainly has been a very overt discussion. I think that it would seem to me that, that a lot of resellers in the space, you know, didn't take Steve Ballmer seriously when he said, look, you know, we're a cloud company. If you're not going to the cloud, then we're not your company. Is that a fair statement? That, I mean, that sort of information had been around and had been pushed?
Yeah, so, you know, certainly I heard a lot of that, but I also have a lot of customers who, you know, don't have a lot of bandwidth to the cloud. And I also was aware of countries such as yours that, that struggle with that at times as well. And so I figured that, you know, somebody was a little smarter than that and realized that, that it works great for major metropolitan areas that have fat pipes to the cloud. But what about all the rural places who need all of the components that are there but don't have a lot of bandwidth? I figured somebody would be smarter than that. And I conference call that was happening about 6 months ago, I threw that out to somebody at Microsoft and asked them, you know, why all we're hearing is cloud? We never hear about on-premise anymore. And I actually got somebody to confess that over 90% of the time. So, you know, you'd look at those kinds of things, and I did, and I thought, well, certainly, you know, I understand there's a push there, and that's an option, but it's not a right fit for everybody. And I had a lot of my clients all telling me, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go there. So I'm the guy in the middle at that point.
Yeah, I think part of it too is that, you know, from at the end of the day, Microsoft is a, you know, is a corporation, and it's, you know, it has to respond to its shareholders. That's what it needs to do. And obviously in this current economic environment, is trying to drive as much revenue as it can. It's also looking to the future. It's got to make bets about which way technology is going relatively early in the game, and then try and, you know, obviously pan them out. You know, and again, it in some cases, it's going to have to say, look, you know, these products aren't making revenue targets. There aren't enough people interested in it. You know, again, to put the improvements into a product like Server 2012, we're going to have to move some of our resources from other areas that aren't getting that response. And I think that, you know, SBS has been a great product, but to an extent, it's probably been a bit of a red-headed stepchild in the fact that, you know, it's got so many products on the one box, and it does have a, you know, and people in the enterprise, and it's not, you know, not standard, and patches have issues, and there's always something that's required that's a little bit different. And that's built up a great community around it, and it has created a really good product because people have really worked on it. But it is a bit of a product that is sort of out there, and it's different from a lot of the people. And perhaps this is where we can bring Jeff in as someone who would have a little bit more experience working with this as an SBS MVP. I mean, what's your take on all of this, Jeff?
Well, let me start by touching on one of the things that Ken was talking about. You know, the idea that the push to the cloud, but, you know, of course, I thought that there would be places that would still need to be support on-prem, or there would be people who would have those preferences. I'd like to offer you a simple statement. The cloud that Microsoft is building, and the push to the cloud that Microsoft is building, I don't know what the percentage is, but let's just say the cloud's being paid for by the 95% of all Microsoft customers on-prem, right? It's not like Microsoft has no customers on-prem right now. It's that they're predicting a wind down of those. And most of us who don't have bags of money would never think to start cutting off at the knees at a crossover point where they are right now. Particularly because, you know, what I know from the SMB MVP tour that I participated in 2011, we went around the world, we talked to people, we got resounding feedback that people still wanted to be on-prem. And, you know, I said, it's not possible for Microsoft to abandon the market entirely. So what I would say is, before I go further and it makes it sound like I'm just rejecting Microsoft's decision or anything else like that, I don't want to defend Microsoft's choice unilaterally. I'd like to play both sides of it. So the first thing I want to toss out is that, yes, SBS is a complicated product for Microsoft to build and integrate, and it's a complicated product for consultants to build and integrate. And because of the needs of the small business market, or needs or perceptions, it needs to be at a lower cost than what the enterprise pays for these same pieces. It forces Microsoft to scratch their head and say, why do we take these pieces that we put together for enterprise that has very little support demand on us, mark the price down for less than we get to enterprise, then spend a lot of time integrating it to make a unique box that we would never build for anybody else in enterprise, and then sell it to people who don't have the talent and skills to be able to put it together, manage it, or maintain it. I'm talking the end customer there. It's a business model that doesn't make a lot of sense, and it puts a lot of weight back onto the integrators, the solution providers, the consultants, or in the case of MSPs, the people who are basically rolling them out and paving the offices by bringing in these stand-up package solutions to continue to maintain the MSP model of it's on-prem, but it might as well be in the cloud. So the SBS product started in a marketplace that had one purpose, and we're now at a point in this marketplace where there's maybe a repurposing that has to be looked at. And the way that I look at what's going on, based upon what I know as an MVP from having been involved with the SBS product, I went through NDA sittings with Microsoft for the releases of SBS 4.5 through the current release of SBS 8 is the code name for Essentials 2012. So I've seen about six major releases of SBS go through the development and release cycle. And I, as a developer around SBS, because of what we do for migration, and for those who don't know, simple statement, we're showing people how to take an existing SBS server, replace it with a new version of SBS server by effectively building it and making the new server in the model that Microsoft intended, but by breaking it down and deconstructing all of the component data and such to bring it back in. So I'm completely familiar with the integration required. And I had observed, starting in the release of SBS 2008, that the integration was getting hard. It was getting really hard. And by SBS 2011, the version-to-version transitions were getting incredibly hard. So what I understood early on that Microsoft wanted to do actually makes sense, which is they don't want to do the integration anymore. They want to pass it down into the market and let the integrators, the solution providers, do that kind of integration. So they're shifting the cost out of their own structure and pushing it downward. And the way I see that is they're saying, okay, it's fine. If you want to be on-prem, you got to take over more responsibility for getting it together on-prem, because we're going to focus our strategies on the cloud. And to the degree that integration specialists are able to continue the design concept of a well-empowered server with all the SBS-like features on-prem, that's fine as long as you feel comfortable with going ahead and installing and putting those pieces together. That's really the logic of what the best summary I can give you what this version of SBS, now known as Windows Essentials, is intending to drive.
Yeah, and I think that, like I said, Ken's talked about the drive to the cloud and the Office 365, and I think part of my comment on all of this too is that the community that people have been involved in generally, the small business, SBSC community, that sort of thing. They've done a great job. They've been very professional. They've upped their skills. They've done fantastic work. And they are the ones who are probably most directly affected by this. But my experience has generally been is this is the vast minority of SBS installs. The vast majority of SBS installs I've seen over the years have been an absolute dog's breakfast. They've been poorly integrated, put on poor hardware. Many workstations aren't joined to the domain. Remote access isn't configured. Basically, the thinking behind it has simply been to buy a cheap version of Exchange and run it, in the office. So from, you know, the point of view perhaps of the Microsoft who provide the product, it would seem that the majority of the installs have been poorly done and given customers a poor experience. So by bringing that experience back inside into the cloud and you know, giving them enterprise features is part of their thinking. I mean, you know, is that a fair comment to say as well, that we're perhaps looking at this, you know, within a bit of a bubble here, that what the people that we deal with and our peers are doing a good job like us, but we're the, you know, they're typically the minority of partners. I mean, what's your experience, Ken, with the general SBS stuff that you've come across outside, you know, your normal customers?
I guess I'm not really understanding the question at this point.
Well, I mean, where do most of your customers come? Are they just pure referrals? Are you picking up SBS customers?
Oh, okay. Yes, actually, most of them have been referrals, but that is the largest part of our customer base are folks running SBS.
So the ones that you pick up that were running SBS beforehand and you know that you bring them on board into your scheme. I mean, what's been their general infrastructure, their general setup been like that somebody else has maintained for them prior to you being involved?
Generally, it's just been some workstations cobbled together, maybe you know, a peer-to-peer network of some kind. You know, there's been a few of them that actually had Small Business Server installed already and configured, and some configured well and some misconfigured.
And I mean, what was the driving reason for the client, you know, picking up, you know, wanting to go with your services? Was it because they're unhappy with their existing IT provider? What's the major reason they're looking to make a change?
Generally, yes.
So I think that, to me, you know, again, the people that do it well do get the business and you know, do end up doing it well. But my experience has been is the vast majority of SBS installs have been so poorly done because they are a relatively, you know, complex product. And even though there are wizards and even there are a lot of information about, they generally haven't been done properly, which would then reflect back, you know, Microsoft will be saying, well, look, you know, the majority of these aren't installed well, we're not getting a good experience, customers aren't liking the product because they feel it's too complicated. So again, maybe the product's not the fit, given the market is now moving to obviously a more simplistic model around, you know, the iDevice, where it's, you know, just click on the icon and the app comes down. There's been obviously a change in the market as well, as people, you know, customers want the simplicity. I mean, at the end of the day, the customer doesn't know they're running Small Business Server. They just need to get to their stuff and send stuff and whatever. I mean, is that a fair statement, Ken, from your experience, or are they more experienced? Do they know, look, I specifically want my, you know, mail on site. Do I specifically want this on site? Are they making those sort of requests?
Yes, we're actually getting, you know, the requests is they want the data on site. They want everything on site, but they certainly don't know the products or the ultimate solution to get there. They don't really have a clue with that. But clearly, every one of them that I've talked to so far has not been interested in moving the data off site.
And what's their reason for not wanting to move? What reasons are they giving you for not wanting to move it offsite, typically?
It varies. Anywhere from, you know, just wanting to be able to go over and touch the box that contains their data and be able to control their data, to, you know, wondering who's in control and who has access to their data, to the performance issues related with moving things to the cloud and the reliability of a good internet connection to that information all the time. A wide variety of answers.
And I think they're
happy. Largely, part of them are happy with the way things are working now in terms of their accessibility to that information.
Oh, look. Again, there are always customers who are going to want that. But
sure.
Again, part of the argument could be made there is, well, hang on. Any system that's connected to the internet is on the cloud. If their system is connected to the internet to send emails, then they're subject to hackers and, you know, or security issues and that sort of thing as well. So their systems are already on the cloud. One of the devices I was thinking of selling to cover some of that was a shell of a PC with a power supply and some light. So if somebody came to you and said, oh, where's my data? You could just point to the box in the corner and see that noisy thing over there burning all that carbon. Well, that's where your data is. Because really, isn't that the same? I do understand that, you know, people see that they want their box and they want to see their data. But really some of those arguments probably aren't valid. We aren't, you know, equally fairly balanced because their stuff effectively is in the cloud. What's the reaction to that?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't hear everything you said, but the gist of what I understood is that there is a constant internet connection, and they basically just want to be able to get access to the data, and they could be easily fooled as to where their data is. And I understand the whole security thing and accessibility and some of that, but some of these folks want to be able to go, not just touch the box of data, they want to be able to pull the plug and take it home if they want, kind of thing. You know, the number one rule in security is physical security. And so once the data goes outside of their four walls, then they really have no idea who has access to the data. Of course, we all know that once it's got an internet connection, somebody can get to it via the internet, even with the best firewalls and everything in place. But there's just that sense with the business owner of that, you know, feeling like they have some level of control over that, I believe, is really what it boils down to.
Robert, if I could jump in.
That's fair.
Yep, go, Jeff.
If I could jump in on this, because I'm concerned that there's, in the questions you're posing and the assumptions you're making, I don't disagree with many of the things you're saying, but I do feel that there's a bit of, if A is B and if B is C, that A must be C, that really isn't true here. First of all, and let me just go back to what you were talking about, you know, that if I accept your postulation that the majority of SBS installs out there were bad. Okay, if I accept the idea that the majority, meaning half of them, that doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't people who are capable of producing good installs if they have the skills, have the experience, take the time, do it right. And the fact that this product existed for 15 years, if what you're saying was absolutely true, then it wouldn't have lasted for 15 years because there is no market for crap. Okay, so obviously there was something effective about this over some period of time, and yes, there were people who were doing poor jobs of either putting together hardware or installing the software or maintaining it. But I think you have to, again, go back and look at where were we in 1995 when the design of SBS started to come out of Microsoft's head and it hit the market in 97. A lot of the people who were servicing small business at that time were what you would call avid hobbyists. They were computer enthusiasts. The concept of a professional IT person in small business space really didn't exist. And it was due to a great deal of influence from the SBS product and the ecosystem that the SBS product created that it became possible to actually go into some of these environments and to deploy in small business, in the smallest of businesses, if you wanted to, this kind of a solution. Now, I'm not waving my hand and saying Novell never happened, and I'm not waving my hand and saying that there aren't any other pieces, you know, that there's obviously Apple solutions and other things like that. I'm just saying that I don't think that SBS is dying because it was never a good product. And I don't think that it is necessarily dying, even per se, given the fact that it's still got another, Microsoft is going to continue to support it for another 5 or 6 years. And you're going to be able to continue to buy it based upon their announcement for another 18 months. And they're spinning up replacements for it that the key difference is that instead of an automated script to install each of the components for you, you will rely upon the installer for the specific products you want to put in. I actually have no problem if 70% of the worst consultants went away and the 30% who are good at it continued to sell a product like SBS, I think that we'd all be better off for it. They would make more money. There would be very few support issues involved in it because they know what they're doing. And it gives an option that the business owner can choose. A key thing about it, again, you know, I come back to what Microsoft has communicated poorly, is that they wanted to take the core of SBS in this product definition that they introduced first a year and a half or so ago called SBS Essentials. It's been renamed to be Windows Essentials, and it doesn't have the products from the other product groups. It doesn't have SharePoint in it. It doesn't have Exchange in it. It doesn't have those other pieces that came from other groups. What it has is a dedicated Windows Server team who are building the quote-unquote essentials to add into it for management pieces, for managing remote access, which is a server feature, for managing data storage, which is a server feature, for managing user assignments, which is a server feature. So basically, the server team has pulled back to focus on what the server team can do. Put this package together, and then embrace the idea that if you're a consultant or if you're an integrator and you think that box should have SharePoint on it, install SharePoint on it. And if you need help, you go to SharePoint. SharePoint team will support you. It's a standard installation. It's not a special box anymore. And if you want to put Exchange on it, the only condition that's been made is it's been unilaterally agreed. You can't put the Exchange on that box. It's going to have to go on a separate, not a separate box, but a separate server. So with virtualization being introduced, you basically need a second DLL registry stack, what we would now think of, well, hey, a second VM. Well, sure, you put it into a second VM, and now you have Exchange deployed the way that it wants to be. The problem with the SBS server has always been, because of the integration, if you really abused it, you could break it, and if you broke it, then you potentially broke all the integration of all the pieces. What they're setting up to do is to set it in such a way that if you broke the Exchange, you repair it by a standard Exchange methodology, and if all else fails, you uninstall Exchange, install it back again, and mount the data. And there isn't any other glue to fix. It's a simpler box to maintain. It's a simpler box for Microsoft to build. And the price point's going to arrive whatever the price point comes to. I think that the ending of SBS really says more about the ecosystem and the marketplace of SBS than it does about a solution set that these same providers will be able to go out and to deliver. I think the weakest consultants and weakest integrators who were doing white box crud, just doing a pathetically bad job of it, I think those people will leave the market because they'll say it's not worth it to me. But I think that the people who really love the idea of doing a solution set that keeps everything on-prem, that gives you a management that you can put your arms around, I think that that's still going to be there. And I'm going to finish by just saying that the arguments as to why do people want to have their servers on-prem versus in the cloud, there's cultural differences, there's nationality differences, there's laws that are involved, there's personal preferences. The example that I would give you is that if you're a small business owner, you are probably entrepreneurial. And if you're entrepreneurial, the way that you grow is by having control, great ideas, the desire to go after it yourself, and to be better than your competitor by innovating. It's really hard to do some of that stuff when you're tied to commodity products in the cloud, that you don't have control over what you've got. You have to adapt to whenever. Yeah, it's like Facebook. Facebook decides to change the way my Facebook works today. I don't have a choice, and I didn't get to control my privacy. This is the fundamental difference, is that if you're a small business owner, you want to control it. And the way you know you can control it is if you got it. And beyond that, if you are a small business owner and you want to buy stuff that once you buy it, you're allowed to run it as long as it runs, then it means that if times get harder, and you want to slow down, you don't have to make a lease payment at the end of the month. You don't have to pay for that. You just have to make do with what you've got. That's kind of my counterpoint.
Well, I think that part of that is like I said, it's not a case that all the installs are bad or whatever. I think that part of it that I see is that the community that you work in, are very good at what they do, and they, to an extent, I've seen is they tend to look at it a little bit insular. I think that the other thing that you touched on there is that obviously, the community that started up, back when SBS initially came out, has grown to an extent now where there's a lot of people in the market. So that has changed dramatically over time. So, okay, Ken, what's your reaction to that?
So, I agree with what I was hearing Jeff say. That, you know, there's a lot of us out there that seem to feel like we can put together a good solution set that seems to work. And in fact, you know, although I said earlier that I'd run into some situations where SBS wasn't configured very well, it was very rare, and usually it was done by folks who work for big box stores, not people who are actually IT professionals. The communities that I run in, my colleagues are pretty well know what they're doing. And so I haven't run into too many of them that have been poorly configured, maybe not fully taking advantage of all the feature sets, but I think there was only one that really was poorly configured. Jeff, I got a question for you. It now appears to us that SBS Essentials 2011 was more than simply product option, but rather to serve as an intended transition to Windows Server 2012 Essentials. Was there something that we non-MVP should have recognized much sooner in that picture?
I it's an interesting question. Let me answer it this way. What we know as MVPs, because it was very specifically told to us, but may not have been specifically heard in the public, is that the SBS standard product, that is, you know, what used to be 2003, then became 2008, then became 2011. 2008 and 2011 were built by a development team on a specific code base. When they developed what are called the Colorado server products, which included SBS Essentials, the home server, storage server essentials, those three products, the Colorado products, they were named Colorado for their code names. When they were developed, they were Colorado ski locations. They were a different code base. It was not the same code base. We knew that they were building up around the new code base, and the argument that they gave us back, this is going back 3 years or so, however long it was that we knew about it, was that we think that we can put together out of a single code base a bunch of different specialized solutions. And so that's what they did. And then they priced them at different market prices, and they had different feature combination sets and such. And SBS Essentials was indicated to us to be, you know, what it is. It's a light version. It was intended to be a lower cost, lighter version. I think some of us sort of assumed that what they were doing was parallel development with the intention that they would bring up the flagship brand of an SBS standard in the next release. But I believe what most of the MVPs, if they thought about it, realized was likely to happen is that SBS 2011 was going to be the last server in the SBS standard design that was based upon a single server. What we expected is that SBS Essentials would come up as one server, and that the second server with the Exchange integration would come up as another VM, because that was just obvious to us. That would be much easier for them to build and to support. So the surprise to us as MVPs was that there was no longer a bundled price combination of the two, that it didn't have some integration support done for us. It was not really that Essentials was the heir apparent and wasn't going to have Exchange on it. It was that they didn't even continue forward with bringing the Exchange in the next release. I think that's what surprised us, and I hope that kind of answers your question.
Yes. Yeah, it does.
One thing I want to take, since I walked through that piece, I want to touch on one other thing that a lot of people have. I really haven't even seen anybody talk about this in the SMB space. When Microsoft made this announcement this past week of what the server platforms are, they announced that there are now four cornerstone server platforms. One of them is Foundation, and that's the 15 user and very tightly strapped down, extremely underpowered, but you know it's useful for what it's useful for.
Sure.
Right above Foundation is Essentials, and Essentials comes out of the box, 25 user, no CALs required. You can run 1 to 25 users on it, and it has the feature set that it has. Both of these are server products which clearly are intended for an SMB market. And both of them have in common that they don't enable the 1+1 additional VMs. You don't get another instance of server with it. The big surprise to me, and I welcome it, is the third product in the stack is Windows Standard Edition. And Windows Standard Edition comes in at, give or take, about the same price of what a standard Windows has cost for the last 6-8 years. It's, I think the list price they say is $82 less. But it has two VMs. You're licensed for two servers. They cut the price of server in half.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you need two, and it runs on a two-processor box. So that was the big surprise. So when you look at what Essentials is at $4.25 U.S. dollars for the list versus $882 U.S. dollars list, Standard has a second instance of server that you can run. It has some additional features that are unlocked, that are still locked down under Essentials. But basically, the first two products of the four that Microsoft has standardized on, first two are SMB products. Standard clearly can be used in SMB, and it supports virtualization on as little as a two-server box. And then the fourth cornerstone is Data Center. And Data Center is priced at, I forget, something like $4,500 US. So it's like the cost of six servers, server licenses based on what the $420 price point of Essentials is. It's like six times the price of Essentials, gives you unlimited VMs, still has to be run on one box. So it means you have to have a multi-way processor to take advantage of all the VMs that go on this thing. If you just back away from that, it's plausible to look at this and say, out of four server products that Microsoft has available, three of them are capable of being installed and delivered on-prem in SMB space at a price point we can afford. Now think about that. That's really embracing the potential of SMB to do it if there's a consultant at SMB who wants to pursue it. And, you know, everybody's focused on SBS got cut. Well, what else got cut? They cut SBS out of the product line because of the integration. They cut web server out of the product line because it just didn't make any sense. It was just a reason to get a lower cost server, and they've addressed that now with the multiprocessor discounting on the license. They cut the high-performance PC because you can now build a high-performance PC out of the data center if that's what you really want to go after. They cut a couple of other products out of this. So it was really Microsoft trying to simplify the product line and simplify their licensing. I think they accomplished it. And the main thing that it says about SBS is that they did not want to continue to do the integration, and they wanted to let the market price drive the price of each component, instead of trying to integrate it and then say, well, because we've integrated it, we're going to sell it as a discount. They're basically letting the market say, what does SharePoint cost? What should an exchange cost? And if you want to go get a third-party mail server product or third-party database information documentation management product, they've opened that up as an opportunity that, as a consultant, if you don't like Microsoft's solution, you can still build it on a Windows platform and put in whatever third-party product you want. So in a sense, it's actually even more competitive, and it's giving an opportunity that if you really, you know, if you're upset that you can't have an SBS, okay, so accept that. Nobody's going to give you that integrated platform for all of those pieces. So now you got a choice of the cloud, or to go integrate what you want of third-party products on Windows, or go integrate what you want on some other platform. But you'll notice the word integrate came up in each one of those things. So Microsoft is leaving themselves room to compete in the integration based upon whether or not they can hold on to their small business consultancies. And that is, to me, the biggest question. Is Microsoft going to be able to hold on to their channel, because they've done a lot of stuff to make the channel and SMB really angry?
So, Ken, what's your reaction, I mean, to what Jeff's talking about having, you know, multi-servers, and perhaps, you know, it is a little bit more difficult to integrate, but it can be done?
Well, the consolidation of the servers, the elimination of things, the target of which they're going with it. I think that the one of the things that the consultants have asked for years is a simplified, simplified set of tools. So certainly this is definitely that direction. That makes it very clear and simplifies things for us in terms of being able to look at the solution sets. Jeff brought out some excellent points about the fact that three of the four options really can be used in the small business space. That is correct. His last question at the end was very, very key. And that is Microsoft really going to be able to hold on to their channel relationship with the partners? I think he hit that spot on. That's exactly the question of the day. I think with the volume of the decisions coming down, timing-wise, between the changes to Small Business Server and the breaking up of that, as well as the SBSC going away in favor of the Small Business Competency, I think has hit the channel very, very hard. And I think the way a lot of the information came out is probably caused much more anger than actually the information itself in all of that. There's certainly some reparations that are going to need to be made to convince many of the smaller partners that they are still in a partner relationship of some kind. That's the feedback I'm hearing as well.
Okay, so obviously there has been mixed messages. Like I said, you bring out a new small business competency, and part of that competency obviously is the requirement to do Office 365 exam, which is very, very tough. It's one of the toughest exams that most people have seen, even those that work in the product. It's not particularly small business focused. It's focused more around hybrid solutions, which is not something you see in the small to medium business. Making that a primary requirement, again, is very tough. I think also too is the fact that when they first announced that there wasn't a lot of material. Study material around to help people move into, get that sort of competency. And then obviously, the whole change about the SBSC going away, the reaction is that it's too tough to do, Ken, or what's the reaction from the resellers? Why is they see that as a major change for their business?
Actually, it's multifold, Robert. I had the opportunity to be on a conference call with about 26 other partners a week or two ago today, and with a couple of folks at Microsoft. And clearly, the unified voice out of that was none of the partners really felt that there was anything wrong with the SBSC. They thought the program fit them. It fit their businesses. It fit what they do. What really came out of that call is there's a completely different perception around the SBSC and the small business competency between the partners and the vendor in that situation. Very different perspectives. The partners stated very clearly that unlike a lot of the enterprise folks who take the certifications and acquire the gold and silver certifications, the logos at our level really don't mean a whole lot to our clients or our customers or the badges or the titles, etc. They mean more to the partners than they do the customers. Not many of our customers have ever asked for somebody with a small business specialist designation. They see that, and it really doesn't mean a whole lot to them. We, as the partners, actually have to explain to them what it's all about and tell them what it means, being able to have that on there. So it was more of a pride thing for the partners to actually take the exam and pass that and feel like there's a little bit of a relationship between the partner and the vendor. It really did not extend out to the customer in that situation. So now the mentality behind the partners is, okay, you're taking that away from us, you're putting another one on there which maybe doesn't completely fit my business model, and you're going to charge me $1,850 a year for the privilege of being able to do that when it means nothing to my customer.
I see what you're saying and I agree. And the other thing that I saw in that especially is that you're right, that revenue is quite significant and it's a bit what's actually included. But at the gold level, I don't know if you've seen, but there's also the requirement in there to reach revenue targets as well, which means obviously you're probably going to have to be sharing your revenue targets or whatever with Microsoft, which is not something the SMB space has really done before.
Now, that's an interesting point. That did not come out in any of the conversations. I think most of everybody was thinking silver level, not gold level, in the conversation, but that's correct.
Yeah, and I think that, like I said, that you include in part of that competency, you include the small business server exam, and then to an extent, you then are deprecating the product. So then, if you were to become certified, as Jeff says, the product does extend for a number of years yet. But there's certainly a disincentive, to do that exam. And to my understanding is there's currently not an essentials exam or whatever. So again, how are they going to? What are they going to put in that place?
That's exactly right. In fact, one of the things that they brought out in the discussion was they've seen a large drop off of the roles of people as SBSCs. And, I certainly am understanding of that. What we did is we kind of tried to talk about why that has happened. And from our own experiences, we saw a huge drop in our membership of our local SBS partner group about 2 years ago. When the economy really started to go bad, we lost about 10 members, and many of them folded up shop and went away, and some of them merged with other businesses. So there is certainly a valid reason for a lot of those dropping off of the SBSC roles, and I understand their concern for that. But I think what we learned in that call is they really hadn't seen that perspective as part of the reason. They thought there were other reasons, and so that was part of the impetus for creating the small business competency along the way. What we said to them is, hey, why not keep them both? This model really fits and works in this space. Much to your credit, you brought up the whole thing around the SBS exam and SBS going away. Well, that exam really wasn't added to the SBSC. This is another component of why people have dropped off. That exam, although it came out over a year ago, was not added to the SBSC set of exams until last October. So that exam was out for well over 6 months, or about 6 months, before it was officially added to the SBSC as a possibility. Well, for many of us, things started picking up business-wise last fall. And if we had been struggling for a period of time, what are we going to do? Are we going to take the time to study and prep and go take an exam? Are we going to serve our customers now that somebody's actually paying us to do something again? Tough decision on there. The customers are going to come first with the revenue, and then the exam will happen later.
No, and I hear what you're saying. And so, I mean, the question I've got for you is, in your peer group, in your group that you look after, I mean, what sort of percentage did you say have actually sat the SBS exams? What, have actually done what's required to firstly get the SBSC and then, the 2011 exam? How many have done it?
The original SBSC, we had probably 80 to 90% of our members do. The 2011 exam, I think we've had a handful, maybe three or four do. Largely for the reasons I explained, is things started picking up about the time they finally added it. And then there's, certainty that come around with that as well. So it's been tough.
There's another point to put in context to that is that, as Ken is saying, that SBS 2011 came out and business started picking up. It's coincidence, but also I think that the product was more motivating. That's one thing. The second thing, and Ken talked about this, is that SBSC was introduced, and then I think it was very surprising to many of the people who took the SBSC competencies that or tested that they were going to have to retake them each year. And some people just got kind of burned out on the idea that I already passed this test, it's the same product, why do I have to test again? It's like a drug test. And that kind of soured them on what's the next thing you're going to make me do for nothing. So it made it certainly reinforcing the idea that, I think I'm just going to go out and make some money.
I hear you, and I agree. I think that the exam expectation in the market is really the exam, I should be able to maybe do a little bit of study and based on my experience pass the, you know, get through the product, which I think has been the case for the other most of the SBS exams. I think that most people who work with it every day can certainly pass it. Maybe they've just got to, you know, study up in a few areas, but I think it's great, easy to get through. That said, the Office 365 exam that is now a requirement of the competency, there is just absolutely no way they would ever stand a chance of getting through without doing major, major study. So again, I think that that's where you get this misconception. You get the broken understanding and people not feeling, you know, and the incentive to do it. But yeah, I mean, all these exams and all these competencies, and it's very confusing for the average partner who maybe not up on the exact speak and is looking to someone, you know, for direction. I mean, you know, Ken, are there a lot of people looking for clarification, or are the people just saying, look, I'm not going to worry about it, I'm going to go in another direction?
Yeah, exactly. That's been the feedback, because people are choosing not to focus on it. And one of the reasons, frankly, is most of the partners that I work with up here really aren't doing a whole lot of Office 365 work. So the thought process behind that is, why do I want to go take an exam that's really a product I'm not doing a lot of sales in or doing a lot of focus in? I think out of all of our membership, I'm aware of two people that actually are doing Office 365 in any level of quantity, beyond one kind of thing.
And
so it just seems like it's a cost prohibitive thing to do at that point for them, and it's a waste of their time and effort.
What's your take on why there isn't more people in the, you know, doing the Office? Is it because the partners are shying away from it, or because there's not the opportunities, or there's not the revenues? I mean, why isn't there that uptake in it?
All the above.
Okay.
Everything you said.
Okay.
That's the feedback I'm getting, is it's all of the above.
But from Microsoft.
And let me add to that also, with all the outages that we saw with BPOS, and even with the outages that we see with Office 365, that's made people step back a little bit.
Well, I think you're always going to get, you're always going to get outages, and again, it's going to happen with on-prem or whatever. And I understand that there's a lack of control, which Jeff talked about, and it is a change of model. But from Microsoft's point of view.
Let's go back to something Jeff said earlier and kind of blend that together for a moment. And in the fact that, BPOS was out for how long? And all of a sudden, there's this huge push to Office 365. So am I going to go out and take an exam that the whole different product is going to be out in 12 to 18 months? I'm going to have to change and figure out again. It's definitely a little bit different model at this point.
Oh, there's no question. In 12 months ago, at SMB Nation, I did tell people that, look, by the next SMB Nation in this October, that BPOS effectively won't be around, and you'll have to have retrained on the new product. Whereas you ask the question, well, how many people are still supporting SBS 2003 environments, and 80% of the room put their hand up. So,
exactly,
it is a complete change. Is that a good thing or a bad thing that the resellers, do need to upsell their skills and change? I mean, again, there are positives and negatives from both sides, and it's a challenge for everybody, but things are moving quicker, and there are the more demands. Perhaps, how can this be addressed? So we've talked about some of the issues and some of the problems that are there. But from your point of view, or your members' point of view, what's some simple things that could be done from your aspect that would improve things? I mean, you've got to look at it again, trying to keep in mind Microsoft's point of view and their drive to revenue, and they want to bring people into new technology. But let's try and, what's a compromise? What could we go away and say, look, this is what we think would work really well?
You bring up an excellent point, I think a lot of us do realize that Microsoft makes their decisions based on metrics and revenue and looking at the expenses that they have. We have to do the same thing as small businesses as well in that process. In terms of looking for something that can be kind of a bridge in all of that, I think really the best thing would be to improve the communication. That's been the biggest downfall, is the lack of consistent communication in a relationship. In terms of the actual product set, yes, we realize that the technology industry has always been a very dynamic industry, meaning it's going to change and we're going to have to learn to adapt to the change. The difference being, in our relationship with our customers and clients, they're asking us what changes are coming. We're trying to plan and help them in their success. But we also need our vendor partners to work with us the same way and keep us apprised of changes that are coming so that we have planned accordingly. I think that's probably the biggest key going forward, is improved communications, where we actually have information that we can use to make good decisions and to plan ahead and to work through things. The product still will kind of, weed itself out along those ways, I'm pretty sure. But in that relationship of communication, that then gives us the vehicle to take the information that the end user, the customer, is giving us and feed that back up, as well as in terms of what their needs are and their, in their environments and their desires. And I think that there's been a little bit of a disconnect between that relationship from the end customer to the vendor through the retailer partner.
Okay, so how do you see that communication? What's the best medium for that to happen? Is it, an email newsletter? Is it through a manager, or is it just, clearer communication? I mean, how do you see how could they make it clearer, I suppose?
Well, I think things like the conference call we did a couple of weeks ago, or even our last group meeting was this Wednesday, and we had a representative from Microsoft to actually pipe in for the conversation. You've got all these SBS partner groups around the world, which are great avenues of communication without having to do a one-on-one with, 1,300 or 13,000 partners. You could certainly get a much better sampling of the information by popping in on these SBS groups from time to time and doing some dialogue.
Well, can I, what about, again, as a counterpoint to that is as you mentioned, there are there's a big community, there's a lot of lots of independent SBS groups. Is it perhaps the fault of the community in some respects that it hasn't bandied together closer, it hasn't come under a single umbrella, it hasn't created a structure that could, feed the information up and then have a more direct relationship with Microsoft? It would seem to me is that Microsoft would say, well, we need to have relationship with all these individual little entities and all these individual organizations, which is, too difficult for us generally. It would be much easier if there was, a larger organization or a group of whatever that was under a formal banner that we could deal with. I mean, is that a fair argument, that the small business community has become fractured over time?
I think to some extent there's probably some validity with that. There's been some fall off in some of that, probably again due to some of the economic things that we've talked about. I think being able to, certainly it would take less effort if we could get a collective voice from all of our groups together going up. Absolutely. But I think one thing that would get lost in that picture is it would actually skew the information a little bit, because frankly, your needs in Australia may be very different than my needs in Oregon, may be very different than Jeff's needs down in New Orleans. You got to take a look.
No question, but what I'm saying is that there is some commonality, there is some uniqueness, but at the moment, if Microsoft, for example, wants to get a feel for the community, as in, the reaction to obviously discontinuing the Small Business Server product, is who do they ask? I mean, they can read the blogs and they get one set of features, and they get perhaps people who aren't part of the community, and when they go and talk and say, look, guys, guys and gals, we're trying to move you, this cloud stuff's coming, we see this, and, this is why we're moving it. Where do they go? Who do they talk to?
Well, let me go back to that conference call that I was on a couple of weeks ago. At the end of that conference call, one of the people that we were speaking with said, well, it sounds like we should have had this call 6 months ago. So clearly, one of the things that came out earlier in that call is they were not listening to the right people. There were some pinpoint questions as to who were they listening to make their decisions, and none of us on the call, or anybody that we knew of on the call, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, of the 26, 27 people on the call, none of anybody that those 26 or 7 people knew had actually been consulted in some of the decisions. So that's a huge, you know, huge opportunity to actually get some meaningful feedback. You don't necessarily have to have a quarterly conference call with every single one of those groups, but if you bounced it around, you'd probably get a pretty good, pretty broader picture of what's going on and what people's needs are in different areas. It took an hour, the call that we did a couple of weeks ago was an hour and a half, but the one on Wednesday with our group was an hour and a half, somewhere in that vicinity as well, and provided extremely valuable on both sides. Great feedback, misconceptions cleared up. Both sides felt much better at the end of the call. I think that kind of thing goes a long, long way.
Okay.
And an hour on a quarterly basis is not much time.
No, I agree. Okay, so that's great information, great feedback from Ken. I mean, what's your reaction to all that, Jeff?
Well, I've been listening over the last year very intently because of the SMB MVP Community Roadshow. We toured around the country, I guess I should say not around the country, around the world. And we had an opportunity in doing that to go out and see a lot of groups. We went to like 55 different cities in the course of that time in Australia, North America, on into Europe and EMEA. And in doing this, it gave me an opportunity to talk to the group leaders, talk to the members to a great deal, and then also talk to people who had never been involved in community. And it really encouraged me to believe that in the small business space, community works, and it is the cross-communication, the I didn't have to hear everything that everybody said because someone else can answer it for me kind of thing. And to a certain extent, obviously, that lives online, but as Ken has alluded to, there's something about working with people face-to-face, integrating, doing demonstrations that you get to see, put your hands on stuff, working familiar with the local market, familiar with the local circumstances. Local community works. Robert, I think you raised a point that, maybe the community is becoming so diverse and so broad that Microsoft can't get their hands around it. Well, to that I would say, yes, I agree with that entirely. But I would also have to say, I think Microsoft is abdicating itself of taking that responsibility. I think that Microsoft tried it for a long time and has determined that it really just does not have the tools to reach out and touch that broad of a space. Somebody at Microsoft is going to say, no, Jeff, you're putting the wrong color on that. We have, and then they'll start talking about something. But the reality is that the local communities are not feeling enough contact and enough context. If you took everything Microsoft has done over the last 10 years and you could bring all the best of it together, you might have a really good working program. But because of all the work that I have done in traveling around, and I've been involved in community groups going back 10 years. When I first started SBS Migration, I went around and visited all of these groups. What I have thought is missing from the local communities and the community groups is a real commitment where it's not about just my local community knows your other local community. I think that there's a problem that there needs to be legal status in places. There needs to be formal organization. And for this reason, I looked at this, and I know in Australia, Robert, your groups over there have organized under the corporation of or incorporation of your groups. You can't extend an incorporation and franchise the entire world. But what you can do is to try and accomplish what Microsoft tried to do and was kind of working, but Microsoft gave up on, which is, I believe that you guys are right. I think there needs to be an alliance. I think that there needs to be an alliance that is more than a secret handshake. And it's something that I've started working on, and I'll be actually making some announcements about this coming up in the next couple of weeks. This is currently, as we're talking, we're in mid-July right now of 2012. And we don't have enough time to go through everything that I want to say about what could be done with an alliance. So let me just give some bullet points, and some of this may sound controversial. I think that the SBSC program gave groups and gave members of groups and gave people who were not members of groups but who could pass the exams, I think it gave them a badge. It gave them a way to identify themselves as, I cared enough to take the test and to commit to whatever, some set of programs. I think that the how's that?
I said exactly.
Yeah. And then I think that the badging is one thing. But then organizing groups, as Ken says, where if somebody wants to come out and meet these groups, there's a way to get to them. And you can say, well, there's contact lists out there. Well, trust me. I know all the contacts. When we did the tour last year for the MVP Roadshow, it takes more than the contacts. It takes more organization. It takes more structure. It's not simple to call up 15 different groups and decide to plan an event that goes out and touches 15 in a row. It's hard. But I know what it takes to do it because we've done it. Microsoft has been relied upon as the standard bearer and the standard setter in this marketplace. And clearly Microsoft is struggling with how to manage that idea in SMB space to the extent that they want to consumerize us into consumers in cloud space. So my argument here is that I don't think all the standards should be up to Microsoft. I think that small business competency should be defined maybe in terms of Microsoft product, but in some cases, maybe it's not a Microsoft product that makes you competent in the small business space. Maybe it is a combination of third-party products or solutions or professionalism or whatever. I think that we are at a point in time where it is possible, it is feasible, and it is practical to actually put together an organization. I have an idea of how to do this. It's something that I've been working on. To build an alliance that enables all of the things from determining who should be recognized an expert, whether you want to call that the equivalent of an MVP or an expert who is the equivalent of an SBSC, or if you want to talk about experts in terms of industry ISVs and such like that, who are the right people, how do you maintain continuity with them, and even take it to the point of being an advocacy group to try and get things done. Whether it's with government, whether it was with Microsoft, whether it's with something else. And then somebody's going to say, okay, well, why not just use one of the existing, I'll pick on one of the familiar names. Why not just use ASCII to do this? Well, the answer is, I don't have anything against ASCII, but this isn't the mandate that they have. It's not the reason that they were set up. And what I have in mind is something that can potentially coalesce existing organizations as they are defined and yet unify them in a larger mesh. That's pretty much the goal that I see, is to create a alliance that defines values, recognition, and conditions to go forward that will improve upon what we've got right now. Because what we've got right now, the community definition of kumbaya, we get together every week and have pizza, that ain't gonna cut it. It's gotta be better than that. It's gotta be committed to standards and practices and contacts and management and process. And I think I know how to get that done. Working on various different potential participants in this, from groups to vendors to industry standard setters. It's a really big project, and it's something that this is actually the first time I've really said anything in public to this degree, other than to introduce this idea at my conference about 3 weeks ago. It's really an idea that is, it's not in its infancy in terms of where do I have the touch points to go forward with, but it's a new idea to be rolling out right now.
Okay, so I think that we're obviously approaching our time here, and we need to be respectful that we do have to get on and do other things. And there's obviously, we've covered a lot of information, and there's probably a lot more to cover, and I hope we could defer that to a bit farther down the track. In summary, before I throw over to you guys for a final word and a sum up, I think that it would appear to me, based on our conversations today, that the technology is the technology and will continue to be the technology. And because it is from a vendor, you know, they will change it as they see fit. Part of it is that perhaps now that we need to move beyond the concept of community. Communities work really well, but it has served in a relatively small environment. Maybe now the community needs to become, as Jeff says, more professional. It needs to become something that can be relied on. And again, maybe the community needs to stand on its own two feet and in some ways help Microsoft understand who we are and what we do as a as a larger entity, and perhaps that's where the secret to all this lies, is better communication, but also from Microsoft's point of view is making it as easy as possible for them to be able to get the information they need, as well as the small business reseller who is elbows deep in you know, reboots and blue screens and doing things for clients, that they are able to get that information quickly and readily, as Ken has indicated, as a way to make sure that they're kept up to date and they feel included in the process. So just to round off, I'll thank you both for your time. What I'll get you to do to finish off is we'll get both of you just to give a quick summary or last thoughts, and then please let the viewers, the listeners, know how they can get in contact with you if they need to. So Ken, what last words from you?
So yeah, going forward, I think there's a bright future in a lot of things, and you know, some of the things that Jeff's talking about in terms of coalescing a community, I think is a good idea. I think that might lead to giving us a larger voice that can communicate with the vendors, and probably not exclusively one vendor in that process as well. I think that there's a challenge that I don't know how we can overcome. But one of the things that vendors, and Microsoft in particular, cannot see and therefore cannot measure is the metrics of the success and satisfaction of their partners and customers, and the reduced support calls due to those partners. There's no visibility really into that. So if we could find some way of you know, turning that into a metric that we can actually show, maybe somebody can get an opportunity to take a look at that.
Okay.
There's also been some pullback, as Jeff said. You know, we've seen the TS2 go away. We've seen a reduction in TechNet. So there's definitely been a reduction in that communication and outreach. So we really are going to need to find a way, whether we initiate that, whether they initiate it, somebody, we got to pull that back up together and get those dialogues going again. So I think there's still some opportunities, and I think it's important that we as a community do not drop the ball, that we stay together somehow, some way, some shape or form, and not let this community just dwindle and go away.
Okay, Ken, that's great. The last thing I'll just get you to do is if someone wants to get in contact with you to ask some questions or to follow up on what you've said, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Best way would probably be to email me, and I can be reached at ken@agapecomputing.com. That's agapecomputing.com.
Well, I'll put that on the post when the podcast goes live. So thank you very much for your time and input there, Ken. Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
No problems. Jeff, your summary and finish off.
Well, I'm Jeff Middleton. You can reach me at jeff@sbsmigration.com. That's jeff@sbsmigration.com. I'll also make the comment that at the conference last month, I also introduced a new broader brand under which SBS Migration customers will soon become acquainted, which is itproexperts.com. Again, longer story there than I'll go into. Suffice to say that I'm not taking SBS Migration down as a business. It is not spinning down as a business. SBSmigration.com is going to continue to be out there to embrace people who believe in using SBS, and I expect to be doing this for years. What I am doing is adding a broader footprint that will do things in addition to what SBS Migration does and take on integration solutions that require different kinds of skills or broader skills and also things that don't involve migration. Am I hinting at the idea that I believe that IT pros are going to have to know how to do integration? Yes, I am. Am I hinting that you're going to have skills? Yes, I am. Am I hinting that I'm going to be around to do it? Yes, I am. I think that the message to take away if you're in SMB space is that if you're not good at your job, you need to go find a job, another one, something you're good at. If you're good at doing IT work in the SMB space, I don't think you have anything to fear. I think there's tremendous opportunity. So I would say don't panic, take a break, rest, think about it, wait for the rest of the information to come out from the SBS team for essentials, and you got plenty of time. You got plenty of time to figure out what you're going to do next, but what you're going to do next is probably going to be more profitable than what you've been doing, I'll bet you.
Jeff, if I chime in, I've got a couple of follow-up questions for you. You were talking about the larger community that you're looking at developing. You mentioned ASCII. You know, ASCII really accepts partners of all sizes and shapes. Are you thinking something really geared more toward those of us that are smaller organizations that serve the small business area in particular? Is that going to be your target for those groups?
To be fair, this is not even yet a whiteboard discussion. But what I am looking at is, if I look at the community as we understand it that has been around SBS and the kind of groups that oriented themselves to SBS, even to the extent of naming themselves that way, the kind of professional designations like the MVPs who crowded around it and loved it even though it was this weird, odd-shaped animal, the kind of vendors who released products that went specifically to that orientation. I think, I hate to throw in the trash word, but I mean, it's kind of like pornography. You know it when you see it. I think that the idea of the SBS-based community that was focusing on these kind of integrated on-prem solutions in small space, I think the qualification would be orientation to market and that kind of solution as the place that we start, and to try and perform the role of producing a platform to capture what may start falling to the side as SBS as a product goes away and as the SBS ecosystem goes away. I would start by just trying to produce a platform that embraces that. If it becomes something else, that's not really what I'm thinking. And if it takes on lots of different sizes, that's not really what I'm thinking. Am I saying that can't happen? I don't know. I just want to focus on right now capturing all the goodness that is known to people around SBS and giving it a longer life, even if Microsoft doesn't want to give the product a longer life.
I think it's a great idea. Now, you also mentioned as part of that description earlier that kind of business side, not just the technical or the product focus kind of thing. So are you thinking similar to what something like the HTG Online or the old MSHTG Online groups are, where it blends businesses into that picture?
Well, let me say first of all that I have a great deal of respect for HTG, and I wouldn't mind being Arlen. You know, I wouldn't mind being the guy who came up with the kind of ideas that he's had and has had the success that he's had. I don't believe that there is enough professionalism in the business sense in the typical members of groups around SBS or the typical people who are out there selling it that you see present and prevalent in what HTG has done. So I have no problem with the idea of saying, hey, let's go steal the best ideas that we can that apply from HTG, or if it makes sense, HTG incorporates into the same concept. I have no problem with that. What I can't tell you, though, is that I don't know enough about HTG's online process to know whether it's a good model or a good fit. I don't see this as a competition. I see it as an opportunity. I see it as there are people who traditionally have not been able to get what they needed out of what HTG offers, and this is potentially a way to offer something that maybe flanges up to the space that they operate in.
Okay, so by the sound of it, like I said, there's a huge amount of information and debate, and obviously it's a matter of finding a good medium. There's a lot of places to achieve that. Again, I think that part of it is that to have a say in the future of the product, or to say to have input into what's happening, you need to get involved, and that involvement generally has to be more than just turning up to a group and sitting in the back of the corner and taking notes. I think that there's probably a call to action for people that you need to be more involved and you need to have more say in your industry, and there at the moment there are various ways of achieving that, and hopefully what Jeff's talking about and other schemes that may come to the fore will help that. So I think at the end of the day, like I said, there is plenty of positive there once everybody's gets over the shock and has time to assess what their business is and what they need to do, what they need to do. And again, part of it will be is some will need to upskill, some will need to do some more work. But at the end of the day, that's always been the case in technology. And we, I suppose, to an extent, we just need to move on. And I think the big message to take away perhaps is we probably need to be a bit more involved with the product and driving it ourselves rather than relying that to happen specifically from a vendor. So once again, we do need to end it off. I do thank both Ken and Jeff for the time that they've given today, and hopefully we can call on them again. And I hope that everybody who is listening has got something out of it, and it has certainly motivated you and made you go and look exactly at, you know, what you're doing and what you can do to help the process, and again, help your peers, and that's what all community is about. So gentlemen, once again, thank you very much for your time. And we'll thank all the listeners too for listening. This has been another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. Thank you very much for listening. This podcast has been brought to you by VMVault. For more information, visit them on the web at www.vmvault.com.au. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.